making retirement Thursday, 9th of May, 2019. The Central Family Order, the Honorable Minister of Health, Care and Justice.
Before the Chief Minister moves his presentation, Central Order.
Members should recall that at the meeting of the 11th of April, I made reference to a ruling of Mr. Speaker for Robert Polizia under the designation of the President of the House. My reference to this ruling arose from the demonstration of the entrance to the lobby of Parliament, since I was concerned that access to the House was being impeded. In 1993, Sir Robert Polizia designated the precincts of the House to include the lobby, the pavement on the western side of Main Street in front of the House, the whole area of the plaza, and the public highway on its three sides. He had issued this ruling as a result of a demonstration that had occurred just before the House met on the 28th of October 1993. Groups of people had carried out a demonstration and displayed placards within the lobby, during the course of which members, particularly the Chief Minister, were stopped and questioned in circumstances that would have led to obstruction. The Speaker was empowered under Section 80 of the House of Assembly Ordinance to designate the precincts of Parliament from time to time. On reflection, it is my considered view that this designation is perhaps too extensive and unnecessary. In so far as the Western pavement is concerned, one also has to take note of the fact that two-thirds of this area is currently taken up by commercial premises. What is important is that as well as the lobby, the area directly in front of the three axes on the western pavement should be kept clear at all times. The park has recently held a series of meetings with the Royal Gibraltar Police and the Gibraltar Law Officer. As a result of this meeting, I have received written confirmation from the Commissioner of Police that there will be police present prior to and at termination of every session of Parliament in the immediate area of the entrance to the lobby of Parliament to ensure the clear and unobstructed passage of the Speaker, members, and any staff members. Given the assurances that I have now received regarding adequate policing and have been empowered by the Parliament Act, I am amending the ruling made by Sir Robert Polizia, and I now rule that the precincts of Parliament will include the lobby and the area directly in front of the three arches on the western pavement.
We will now proceed with the presenting standing order. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour today on the table the annual report for the Parole Board of 2018, the Exposition Act 2018 Code of Practice, and the command paper on the draft bill to make provisions for surrogacy arrangements and parental orders.
Order to act. We now move to answers to your questions.
Now over the Chief Minister.
Reporting Commission.
The Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the report of the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform.
We now move to answers to all questions, and we commence with question number 45. The questioner is the Honourable Alice Dennis.
Mr. Speaker, service question 481 of 2018. Can the government provide details in relation to the extensive procurement process carried out and the persons involved in placing the decisions?
Answer, the Honourable Minister of Commerce. This is to go last with question together with question 3652019. Question number 46, the Honourable Alice Lamont.
Mr. Speaker, by when do the government envisage to have paperless departments in the public sector?
Answer, the Honourable Minister of Commerce.
The major aspect of the digital transformation program underwent an extensive routine of process to ensure that the government had an appropriate ERP system to meet our needs. Various government organizations were involved in the process, including the Treasury, Office of the Finance Secretary, the Human Resources Department, Civil Service and Public Service, the Devoted Health Authority, Information Technology and Logistics Department, my ministry, and other government organizations and officials that formed part of the process on an outside basis. Some aspects of the process exceeded the EU threshold. The public procurement of the government in the use of EU framework contracts to some of the awards. The speaker framework contracts allow contracting authorities to award individual contracts as long as they satisfy the conditions of the framework and achieve contractual compliance. These conditions are over and above any local requirements for public procurement. The EU framework to be used for this purpose is Fast-Track Europe. The procurement selection process involves a competitive tender between leading global providers. The process culminated with three preferred suppliers having been scrutinized and gradually reduced in the tendering by a second and third round of evaluation, eliminating providers at each stage, and ending up with a final preferred provider in accordance with the agreed process for determination of bids. The winning bid was finally approved by the Government Project Steering Committee involving ministerial and senior government stakeholders. E-Government Political Transformation Programme is introducing a working environment where current paper-driven procedures are replaced by digital and automated alternatives. Government is also progressing on the development of a specific software which is currently operational in 16, now 17 government departments, government organizations. The software has contributed to a diminished use of paper, specifically the use of paper requisition forms, local purchase orders and payment vouchers, and the subsequent use of paper, including copies and certificates, which currently form part of the payment process for departments, including the Treasury, but still rely on manual processes. We are making steady progress across all areas of the digital transformation program, but it is too early to begin to estimate the energy of accuracy by when we will have paperless departments in the region.
Speaker, thank you, Member, for that answer. Could the Honourable Minister confirm whether senior management members of the ICOD department were part of that steering committee, please?
Speaker, for members, I cannot recall if they were in the final steering committee that made the decision based on the advice that you speak from all the different organizations that we refer to, including the ICOD, were involved in the process. I can't recall if they were actually on the final steering committee, which was public treasury, financial secretary, and other of the needs as opposed to the other.
Question number 47, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise and list how many distinct payroll systems are operated across government, government authorities, the devoted government corporations, and all directly or indirectly owned companies for which an annual payroll software license is paid?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Commerce.
Mr. Speaker, the government operates the following payroll systems. And in saying that, I have to clarify the answer that it's in fact one payroll system, but with a number of variations. So I'm talking about four different configurations, not four different payroll systems, if that makes sense. Government payroll, wages, salaries, and pensions. This includes payroll preparation for the authorities and agencies, not listed below. The GSA payroll, salaries, this includes urban residential services. Education, supply teachers, SNR, SO, lecturers, and invigilators, and care agencies, supply staff, which is a monthly role. No annual software license is paid, but the advisor of the government is the owner of the software. The payroll application operates within a fair operating system with a government income tax application. The combined maintenance cost is circa £131,000 per annum. The majority of government-owned companies need the Treasury salary system for the preparation of salaries. A small group of government-owned companies rely on third parties, such as PwC or GJDS, to prepare the payroll systems.
Speaker, grateful to the Minister for answering. In terms of the four payroll variations that he mentioned. Would I be correct in saying, and I'm happy if I'm wrong in terms of correction, that there are, in fact, self-dedicated to producing, for example, the pearls of GSA, a separate one for education, a separate one for carriage ministry, and a separate one for government in general? Or is it there is one centralized payroll function that then does that job for these different entities?
My understanding is that there are currently different people in each of those four areas working on payroll. Part of the e-government project will centralize that into one payroll system within HR, which is where we believe it should be parked, to give it a far more efficient method of doing.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Minister for his answer, and of course, I wholeheartedly recommend that what he suggests is in fact undertaken with all the efficiencies that we have.
Question number 48, the end of the OCC.
Does the Minister consider that the financial services industry has been properly consulted on the financial services bill before its intended implementation date in March 2019? This question has obviously been overtaken by events.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Commerce.
It has indeed been overtaken by events. It's before and it will be only probably no, it's the simple answer. I imagine we will engage in a different discussion at the time. But my answer, as reported, is the financial services bill will not and has not been introduced before the 10th of March 2019. We have been consulting on this bill with the Finance Centre Council, representing the financial services industry since July 2017, and will continue to do so.
And can the Minister confirm that? My understanding is that originally the intention was to take certain aspects of the legislation that were linked to Brexit, coupled with substantive reforms of the system in which the FSC operates. But the government has now decided to decouple both, and in the future is going to be proceeding with reform of the system, not necessarily linked to what needs to happen in a Brexit situation.
What happened, and which is where I'm adding the information to the honourable member, leading to the question, was that in late January, February, we were faced with a looming hub budget, with a lot of preparatory work having to be carried out in order to ensure that our transition from one system to the other with the UK passporting system worked, required an awful lot of work. Consequently, what we did was we issued an instruction to cease work on the new financial services bill, and so, as I might have to reference related decoupling, we cease work on the LRP, and we work extensively on preparing ourselves for the hard Brexit on the 29th of March. Before that, the intention was to bring in the financial services bill, and then to do the Brexit work post that. So basically, we ran out of time, and we weren't able to complete the new legislation with sufficient time to consult the industry properly on it before going ahead. So the position today is that the budget work is ready, other than that may need to be done if it's needed at all. And the financial services bill is working its own final program, which I hope to do very soon. And we are consulting on significant chances that through the Finance Centre Council. So by the time we publish the bill shortly, we'll be in a position of taking a bill to the views before we take it from.
Now move to question number 77, and the questioner is the Honourable T.N. Hume.
Have any work been carried out since the erection of scaffolding at Blue Wave House in Mid Harbour Estate?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker,
said, the scaffolding on the west side of Blue Wave House, St. Harbour Estate, was erected in December 2018 to carry out a survey to ascertain the condition of the facade. There now needs to be a second, more intensive survey undertaken.
Yes, the outcome of the first survey indicated that there is some flaw. So if an assistant is presumably why a second survey needs to be carried out, 5 months approximately have passed since that first survey. Can the minister assure residents that the action is being taken as quickly as possible in order that the scaffolding does not have to remain in place any longer than necessary?
Mr. Speaker, the issue of concern is that the scaffolding has to be affordable in a building that was constructed nearly 10 years ago. Mr. Speaker, it is of great concern that the survey needs to be undertaken in the first place, of greater concern that the result of that survey is that we need a further one. It goes without saying that any work that needs to be done and any remedial work will be done as quickly as possible, but what is regrettable is that they need to be done at all, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, inevitably that was going to be along the lines of the response that was expected. Of course, I won't refer to the likes of Montague Gardens and others that had similar issues or certainly had issues in which scaffolding had to be re-erected after construction. I don't want to go into the politics of that. I just want to get assurances that, because 5 months is a long time for two surveys to take place, presumably then if those surveys require remedial work, are the residents going to be with the scaffolding in place for a year, 2 years, 5 years? Does anyone have any idea in terms of forward planning about how long the residents have to have the scaffolding in place?
Well, Mr. Speaker, given that some of the tenants affected by the fault in the construction of the building have massive cracks in the walls, then clearly, of course, Mr. Speaker, it is our desire to remedy this as soon as possible. The Honourable Gentleman can rest assured that we will remedy the defective construction of this building built by the Honourable.
Question number 78, the Honourable Tian Hand.
Mr. Speaker, what works are being carried out at Malaya House in Barrowdale Estate, which the city still was not constructed by the USD?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, minor repairs are being carried out to a number of flats in this street.
Question number 79, the Honourable Elephant.
So the Speaker, can the government provide a schedule with the details for each applicant currently on the housing medical list, including the date each applicant is listed, the room composition required?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, these are for 2000 and I apologise to the Honourable Gentleman, I might have a copy of the schedule. I'll circulate one in a moment, but I'll read it out in the meantime. Since 2013, there are two on the 1 RKV list, one on the 2 RKV, no one on the 3 or the 4 RKV, and one on the 5 RKV. For 2014, there are 12 on the 1 RKV, nobody on the 2, 3 or 4 RKV, and one on the 5. 2015, Mr. Speaker, 5 on the 1 RKV, 1 on the 2 RKV, 0 on the 3 RKV, and 0 on the 4 and on the 5 RKV. There are 8 on the 1 RKV for 2016, 2 on the 2 RKV, 3, and none on the 3 RKV, 2 on the 4 RKV, and none on the 5. In 2017, there are 21 on the 1 RKB, 3 on the 2 RKB, 2 on the 3 RKB, 4 on the 4 RKB, and none on the 5. For 2018, there are 28 on the 1 RKB, 15 on the 2 RKB, 5 on the 3 RKB, 1 on the 4 RKB, and none on the 5. For 2019, Mr. Speaker, so far we have 5 on the 1 RKB, 1 on the 2, 5 on the 3 RKB, 1 on the 4 RKB, and 1 on the 5 RKB.
Question number 18, the Honourable Ian Simpson.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise the anticipated total cost of the new Hassan Centennial Terrace and Affordable Housing Scheme, and how does it propose to finance its construction?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the tender processes remain ongoing, and this information is commercially sensitive at this time.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Lady may be able to correct me, but I understand the price list has been published, and people have been invited to sign contracts to purchase flats. It's actually saying that they're inviting people to sign contracts when they don't know what the cost is going to be. Is that what he's telling the House? Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman has obviously not had experience of being involved with a developer of property. The nature of the relationship between a developer and a contractor is one which gives rise to a price, but not a final negotiation in respect of additional work that may be required. So what the government has done is ensure that we're able to progress with the work and progress with the sale, and will carry the risk of the purchase prices not covering the construction cost in the event that the final prices were not as yet not finally agreed. We have little reason to think that the final prices will be different to that which is now on the table and is being left. Indeed, it may be that we're able to obtain an even better deal for the taxpayer than we have obtained already. We have conducted the negotiation as diligently and as effectively as we conducted it in relation to the two comprehensive schemes. The price of which led the Honourable Mr. Featon to suggest that we were in fact the best negotiators on the planet. So I'm very pleased, Mr. Speaker, to be able to confirm that although the price is not yet final and therefore cannot be given across the floor of the House, it is as near as final as possible, but there are permutations still which are to be agreed. We do not believe that that creates any meaningful risk to the government, but it is not yet a final signed agreed figure. I'm grateful to the Chief Minister for his candid response and information. But the second part of my question was, how does the government effectively propose to finance it? Now, he says there's no more or less a figure for the cost, but I'd like to know how is he going to propose to finance that. Now, we know in the House that people who are signing up to purchase these apartments have been asked to make effectively capital down payments monthly towards the final purchase price. So I imagine the Chief Minister will say, well, look, the amount will come from purchases. But I'd like to know where the why is going to come from. The rest is not being financed by purchases. Can the Chief Minister give me an indication? Well, Mr. Speaker, the payments from purchases are in keeping with the mechanism which was established some time ago as to how we sell affordable housing. And indeed, in the time the Honourable Members were in opposition, sorry, were in government, and they were responsible for the sales of affordable housing, they also required purchasers to make state payments against the delivery of their property. So that part of the process does not seem to me to be one that can be controversial. And in some instances, people historically have said
where stage payments ahead of completion are relatively high, so I obtained what is known as a bridging loan, and that those payments are made on the bridging loan, and I pay the bridging loan, and the bridging loan then becomes part of the mortgage at the time of completion. That is the standard way in which successive administrations have sold affordable property. So I'd be surprised if he was surprised at that. From the tenor of the session, he didn't seem to be addressing that. He seemed to be suggesting that the government itself was going to have to find the money to make the payments against the contractor, which in the second year would be a shortfall from the amounts that were paid by the purchaser, which is of course the case. And I anticipate making a detailed statement of how the government is going to do that. And the very latest in the course of the budget debate, perhaps. Oh, yes. Speaker, I must say I found the latter half of his contribution now a piece of my interest. The Chief Minister will say, look, I'm not going to tell you now if there is one budget. But is that the government is, in fact, intending to borrow more money in order to finance the building of the affordable houses? Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman asked me when I'm going to say how we're going to do something. Then when I tell him what I intend to tell him how we're going to do something, he starts to present me with a different option, which may be the ones that have taken to do something. Before I have told him, I will tell him how we're going to do that thing. So I'm not going to be led up the garden path of doing a multiple state examination of how we're going to finance, whether it's by A, B, C, D, or E. But if I have piqued his interest, Mr. Speaker, I intend to keep him piqued. Until the moment comes when I'm going to make a statement. The problem I don't want to go into today is that I'm finalising the details of how it's going to be done, and I want to be able to make a detailed statement, which means that there'll be no need for honourable members to speculate any further about how the financing is going to occur, or indeed for members of the community to speculate as to how the government is going to finance the building of these homes. And indeed will say those concerns that some may have about whether or not government, not just one or the next one, but government generally, can continue to fund affordable housing for future generations of working people in Gibraltar, which is a principle that was established by the BFRP in 1988 when we founded the principle of affordable homes and 50-50 homes in particular, and which we have continued in association with the Liberal Party now that we're in government. So as soon as I'm able to make the statement, I will do so, as I've indicated to the Honourable Gentleman a moment ago.
Mr. Speaker, I realise that the Honourable, from what the Honourable Gentleman has said, that he is not going to condescend to any kind of detail, but does the government envision that it will have to pay a balance over and above what it actually collects for potential purposes? And if that is the position, in broad terms, does the government have an idea of the percentage that we're talking about that it will need to fund over and above the contribution of purposes, in broad terms?
From the speaker, I can see the Honourable Gentleman that figure almost entirely to the teeth. Without regard to the fact that there is a loss of value on the premium of the land, of course, because as you know, the principle established in 1988 is that the land is provided at no cost. So the contribution in terms of the development cost in all of the work that we have done, because we do not give any advantage to somebody who wishes to acquire 100% of the property, is likely to be in the region of 50%.
Question number 81, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise why it moved the housing rent payment office from the Main Street Post Office to New Harbour?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the rent collection office has not been moved from the Post Office to New Harbour. The rent collection office has always been located in the housing department, which is at New Harbour since it moved to City Hall in January 2016. In February 2016, an additional counter was opened at the post office temporarily with a view to it being phased out once people get used to new engines. This temporary additional counter, which when it closed last year had only been open for 1 week a month, was finally phased out last summer. This was announced publicly in a press release dated the 13th of July 2018. The housing department has modernized its system and made available alternate methods of payment, which include deducting its costs for all public servants on occupation pensions, standing order payments, and online payments on the eGov service. These are actively encouraged and have proved to be very popular. These initiatives have had a very positive result in reducing the number of people who paid in person, to the point that it reduced by 80% and therefore deemed not viable to have the additional temporary counter at the post office any longer, as this demand was not high enough since tenants took up the many other options available to them to pay the rent.
I speak on grateful to the Honourable Lady for her answer. I noticed today, having walked past the post office, it is now occupied by the space that is once the rent collection counter temporary, whereas it was, is now occupied by the water car park and things of 6 miles to make it. The speaker, I may quote from a newsletter published in the 7th of May this year by the Gibraltar Senior Citizens Association, of which we must, of course, be aware. Because what they say is, Mr. Speaker, as it is well known, I'm quoting Mr. Speaker, we are not opposed to seniors having to go to New Harbour to pay their rent. But we have proposed a venue to Minister Supplemental where arrangements for deduction from pensions or direct debit can be done quite hassle-free for regularly. I'd be grateful if the Minister could give her thoughts on the matter.
Mr. Speaker, needless to say, I have a close working relationship with Mr. Heath from the elderly, from the Senior Citizens Association. And we have come to an arrangement whereby Mr. Heath assists us in this policy because, in turn, it assists his elderly members. And he distributes for us, for the housing department, the forms that enable senior citizens to have the rent deducted by standing order or any other methods that are available to him, to them. And on this basis, we work closely together. And he facilitates the making of the arrangement so that he distributes the forms to his members, and his members take it to the bank, and there's no need thereafter for the members to come to any counter to pay the rent.
And Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the House will congratulate this individual for his citizenship in helping his fellow elderly person. But from my reading of the newsletter, it is apparent that they are looking for a venue and that he has proposed a venue to the Minister. Can the Minister confirm whether that is the case and does he have a venue in mind? Or is he saying that he has no intention of providing a venue similar to what was available on Main Street before? And I will tell the Minister that we have actually had very distressed senior citizens coming to see us because they can't make the trip down to New Harbour because it's not that easy for them. Now, a record of these people are not used to the idea of direct debit, so there may be a question of providing transitional service to get them on into the system. And of course, I understand the efficiency gains in doing that. But in the meantime, would the Minister consider at least providing some kind of we want for a temporary assistance, and until they are satisfied that everybody needs to be on the direct debit system, where everybody is tripping. It is evident that people are not happy, and they can very easily address the system.
If you think of a transitional period, as one of the members has left, has been in place since 2016, to the point where the foot traffic for payment has been reduced by 80%. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman, being a man of figures, a man of numbers, and overall a man who promotes efficiency in the public sector, doesn't seem to grow that cannot be further today. What we've been doing, the methods that we've introduced, actually help elderly citizens and senior citizens in the payment of their rent, not only because it's more convenient to sign a mandate for a standing order and it's deducted from your bank account on a monthly basis and you don't have to worry about it thereafter. Not only is that more convenient than having to go and personally pay it at a counter, whatever counter, every month, but it's all that more important for elderly citizens who may be forgetful or for any other reason may find it inconvenient to pay in person on a monthly basis. Mr. Speaker, regardless of where the counter is, it may be too hot, it may be too cold, it may be raining, they may forget, other things may happen. The measures that we've introduced are not only more efficient for the public sector and help us work faster, because we can dedicate our time to the back office and other things and other demands within the department, but it's actually better, safer and more practical, particularly for elderly people, because they are assured of paying their rent on a monthly basis. One of the things that concerns elderly people the most is paying their rent every month on time, those who worry and those who pay rent are very, very particular about ensuring that they pay their rent on the first day of the month, and it's a big step for them to pay their rent. By introducing these measures, and by encouraging these measures, and Mr. Heath, who's the chairman of the Senior Citizen Association, helps us encourage them to take up these measures, works all round for everyone. I understand that there may be people who like the physical trip to a counter, and prefer counter A to counter B. But the fact, Mr. Speaker, is that whereas until 2016 the housing department was based at City Hall, it is now based at Newhaven. Whereas City Hall may have been closer for people who lived in one estate, and New Harbour is now closer to other people who live in other estates. We can't please everybody in the town, Mr. Speaker, but our office, our new offices in New Harbour, Mr. Speaker, are completely accessible to everyone with disabilities. They accommodate people in wheelchairs and mobility scooters. There are various bus routes that arrive at the New Harbour offices. Mr. Speaker, it's very welcoming for elderly people and people with disabilities. We have a lift, we have everything. But if people don't want to go and pay in person, then they are free to take up any of the alternative methods of payment, which has been very successfully taken up in the last few years, which includes a period that he suggests we already started 3 years ago. And what Mr. Heath means in that letter and what we've agreed since then, what he meant in the newsletter is that we agreed on a point where people could attend to complete the form for standing order, as opposed to a point for where people could go and effect payment. That's what he meant, and we've made arrangements for there to be several points. We've engaged with the senior citizen clubs, we've engaged with residents of the purpose-built flats for the elderly and their committees. We've engaged and continue to engage with the tenants association of the various estates so that they become our agents in helping us distribute these points and encouraging tenants to complete them and either return it to us and we can return it to the bank or they can give it to the bank directly. It's something that's working and it's working all around. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I think that the Honourable Gentleman should congratulate the Housing Department on the success of making it a very efficient process, not only for staff, not only for the efficient recovery of rent, which is of course something that we all want on a monthly basis, but really for having introduced these measures that facilitate the payment of rent for everyone.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I certainly have no hesitation in congratulating her on introducing a more efficient rent collection system. My only concern was the distress caused, apparently caused, to some sections of our senior citizens, but it is actually said she has engaged with the senior citizens association and come up with an imaginative solution that works for all, then I'm fine with that, and I congratulate her.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I accept your congratulations, and I'll go further. I'll send the Honourable Gentleman some of the standing order slips. So if you were to happen to bump into some of the very few people who now want to still pay by rent and don't have it deducted, you can make them complete the form and help them submit it to the bank automatically.
Question number 82, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, the Government states one of will commence building homes for rental pursuant to its announcement at the 2018 budget.
I'm from London, Minister for Housing and Equality.
Speaker, I refer to my answer to questions 452 of 2018 in the last Parliament session, as well as to my previous answers to the same question, and also, Mr. Speaker, to my statement in Parliament on the 11th of April and various public statements on the matter.
Mr. Speaker, does the Honourable Lady agree with me that there is a real need in our community for the building of rental homes?
Indeed, Mr. Speaker, which is why we have already said that we will be building them, and we have said where and we have said when.
Mr. Speaker, in the Minister's statement, press release of the 12th of December 2018, which is in response to the GSD housing statement in relation to rental accommodation, amongst other things, the Minister said since 2011, the government has built 895 affordable homes and a further 140 purpose-built homes for rental for the elderly, where priority of allocation was given to applicants in the pension exchange list. This resulted in the release of government rental stock in the majority of the cases. The system obviously provides an increase in availability of rental housing stock. This logic is blindingly obvious. Does the Minister agree with that statement, and is that the position of the government in relation to the provision of rental homes for our community?
Mr. Speaker, it doesn't believe whether that the leader of the opposition in Parliament has read to me the press release that I wrote. I read to me my quote, and asked me if I have agreed with my quote. It is regrettable, Mr. Speaker, that instead of reading from a press release that was issued a while ago, he hasn't referred to the government's latest press release, which contains my statement to this Parliament on the 11th of April, at which he was not present, Mr. Speaker. I would have thought, Mr. Speaker, that in this Parliament one would expect people to be up to date with announcements like my name, Mr. Speaker. And while, of course, the Honourable Gentleman was not here on the 11th of April, and I'm sure that he would have had some perfectly legitimate reason for not having been here, Mr. Speaker, what I told this Parliament in my statement on the 11th was that I announced that in our forthcoming development of affordable housing and properly for me, we would also, in addition to the construction of affordable housing, would also build a block which would be purposely built and accommodation for the elderly. That is rental accommodation, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Gentleman, I don't think at this stage can be forgiven for not understanding how the housing process works, Mr. Speaker. Affordable housing, clearly and logically to anyone, has a knock-on effect on the housing rating, particularly given the way that we are allocating affordable housing in these developments now. The allocation priority criteria has changed, and that's been publicly announced. The first priority criteria for allocation goes to people who are currently housing tenants and who deliver vacant possession of government housing upon purchase. So, improvement number one, Mr. Speaker, is that by the construction of affordable housing, we have more rental stock released back into the stock because we are giving people who will give us those homes preference. And as I said on the 11th of April, in the statement to Parliament, Mr. Speaker, on this occasion, on the Sound Continuing Services, we have 130 of those such applications. But in addition to that, and that is only the figure that relates to the Sound Continuing Services, I am confident that we will have more as we progress the other affordable housing estates, which will be announced, as I said, in the summer. But in addition to that, we are also building affordable, we are also building housing for rentals. It will be rental stock, which will be purposely built for the elderly. Again, the tenants of these flats will be, the majority of whom will be current housing tenants. So we will be adding to the stock by way of rental flats. But those bigger flats that those elderly citizens will be will also be returned to stock. When we're building, Mr. Speaker, and construction costs money, and this construction is paid for by the taxpayer, we must ensure that we construct as efficiently as possible. And there is nothing more efficient than constructing perfectly built homes for the elderly, because not only do we provide rent, but it means that our elderly citizens have a better quality of life and it promotes independent living. By doing that, Mr. Speaker, not only is that better for the citizen, but it will also, it is important to say that they can live better independently for longer, thereby keeping away from the hospital, their needs for elderly residential care, and thereby there's another consequence of saving on the tax bill, Mr. Speaker. I'm absolutely convinced that this is the best way forward.
Thank you for making many more lengthy exchanges on this matter, because there was a statement of policy from the government, and subsequent to that statement, there were lengthy exchanges across the floor of the House. The matter was well ventilated less than a month ago. So, with our very honourable leader of the opposition, one other supplementary, and then we move on.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not in Mr. Howe's attempt to wriggle on the hook that he's got himself into for making statements in the 2018 budget. It is quite clear, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking the Minister to agree with me that actually the housing has been pressing her in relation to rental homes, not for those for the elderly, but for those single dwellings that are much in need in our community. Private landlords in this community have asked her specifically about what she intends to do in relation to building homes for rental. It is clear by the numbers of people, not only applying for affordable housing, but those on the list of social needs, that there is a real need within our community for rental homes. I quite understand what you mean about how homes are vacating, therefore they expect to house those people that require homes for rental. But it simply is nonsense, Mr. Speaker. And I am given to understand the members of the public that they have communicated the rationale to her, which she doesn't take on board, Mr. Speaker. But does she agree with that? Mr. Speaker, the government fully agrees with the policy that the minister has brought to the cabinet and is the right policy to pursue, which is to continue to build more property for elderly tenants of existing government property. For all of the reasons that the Honourable Lady has set out, and indeed for all of the reasons that the Honourable Gentleman has said that members of the public, active for housing and private landlords have approached the Honourable Lady and indeed the government. Because this is a simple calculation, Mr. Speaker, that I have explained before, that the Honourable Lady has explained before, and which the Honourable Gentleman needs to pause to understand. Now, private landlords who have problem tenants, and a problem tenant may be a tenant who is paying his rent, but it's just below, and the private landlord wants to be able to charge more. Private landlords, where's the problem tenant, come to the government and say, please build more rental accommodation so that this person who's building against the near the low rent can rent from you at the lower rent and I can rent out at the higher rent. The other government seems to be suggesting that that is what the government should be pursuing. And it's exactly what it says. I will listen to the private landlord. The private landlords who have property which they do not service, they do not invest in, and they have people who pay low rent. And they say, well, the person pays a low rent, therefore I can't afford it. Therefore, you give them a home and be me rid of this tenant. That is the position. Keep housing, they represent tenants who come and see them, who say, I want a house and I need it now. And that's keep housing, come to see that. But so what have they done from the old days when there was an impossible housing list? And sometimes, Mr. Speaker, they present to us the needs of somebody who is 200 from the housing list, and they know that the person who is first should have more permanent. And of course, then there are individuals who are in severe social needs who come to us because they need an allocation sooner than they might have it, which is the way. It is obvious, Mr. Speaker, to anybody who looks at this, that whether you support the landlord's right to get rid of a tenant who pays a low rent in order to get a tenant in the pay of higher rent, which the Honourable Gentleman appears to do. Whether you support asking for housing, or whether you support those who want to move more quickly into a government tenancy from private dwellings or from other tenancies where they may be cramped, which may be government tenancies, whichever one you try and skin the cat, the most efficient way to build is not to build homes for rental for people who are not thinking of. For simple reason, you build a home, you give one home. You build an apartment for a pensioner who is an existing government tenant, and by building one apartment, you get two, at least, because the Honourable Lady's
management, what is its management of the waiting list, enabled us to get more than two properties in most instances by entailing who moves around from what to where. Now, this seems to be complex for the honorable leader of the position to understand. Other members of the opposition have understood it, indeed, as I may say so. I have said in this parliament on a number of occasions that we did not think it up. This was something thought up. Somebody is gesticulating from the gallery to figure out everything they should do. This was thought up by the former administration, by the GOP. They started with the calendar. It was the right thing to do. We've got issues with the building policy of the calendar, we've got issues with the allocations and the way that they were done, it could have been done more efficiently, etc. But it was something that was originated in their administration. We agreed with it. They did. I bet it's ours. A much larger iteration of the original experiment in typical India. We have issues as to how the properties were allocated, we've got issues with the layout, etc., etc. But the concept is the right one. They took people who work in a tenancy, somebody who has a 4-5-13 property, it's not the one that the people that the honorable gentleman is referring to need. Most of them need the larger property. And they move them to a single occupancy property at Bishop Kalinga or at Bishop Ham. They then got the 4-bedroom, 1-5-bedroom and gave that 4-bedroom, 1-5-bedroom to the persons who were on the waiting list. By building one property, they got two. Some of these things are 3 or 4 because you can move people around more efficiently. So, just to remember, the honorable gentleman referred to the press release saying 140 times 2, 280 times 3, which is the number that rather get maybe usually ends for sometimes he gets more, is 420. In other words, Mr. Speaker, from 140 you can get very near an estate. But to get that number of tenancies moved around, or to create that number of tenancies, if you don't do it in this way, you have to do 400 properties. 400 properties, 4-bedroom, 5-bedroom, etc. Now, Mr. Speaker, we don't disagree that we need rental accommodation. We agree. The question is, what is the most efficient way of quickly and cost effectively delivering that rental accommodation? Is it because you've got an old couple who are asking us for these properties? Yeah? No couple, sitting on their own in a 4-5-bedroom property. And you've got somebody in the waiting list waiting for a 5-bedroom property. What's the efficient thing to do? To build a new 4-5-bedroom property. That's what the gentleman is saying to us. No thought. It's to build a 1-bedroom property for the elderly in a block which they would be delighted with because they're clamoring for them, where they're looked after, where they have the services that elderly people need in the way that we have been providing. And they all feel very comfortable. Well, we've made the decision and we've defended the decision. We believe the most efficient, the most proper, and ultimately the most comfortable position for people to be in is to build for the elderly for the reasons I've set out. People who are on the housing waiting list, people who are on the housing waiting list, because I'm not saying to us, I would please like a new apartment in a new government estate. And I think the honourable gentleman would not defend that that would be what people would be entitled to seek. People say, yes, I need a property. And there are some instances where we need smaller properties, there are some instances where we need larger properties. And that's why moving people around efficiently is an important part of how you manage the stock. But the right way to deal with the social need is to ensure that we're dealing with that other hugely important social need, which are elderly people now living on their own in very large government properties. They set out to do it, and we agree that it's the right thing to do. They built an estate for rental as well. And when they built that estate for rental, for every property that they built, they got one. When you build Mid-Harbour's estate, you build one property, you got one property, you put one person in it.
At the same time, you build something like out of yourself, you get two or three for every apartment. So, given where we are demographically, Mr. Speaker, we have a very clear view, which I would ask them to consider very carefully and adopt, because it's the view that they help us develop. It's the most efficient, most closely just and consistent approach to take, and more quickly deliver 400 properties than building 400 properties. Now, it's property rental, it's the position we've taken, the other government can ask us next time again if you like to, Mr. Speaker, allow them, we're going to give them the same answer.
I hope that it is totally relevant to the question on the order paper. I'm prepared to call the Honourable Deputy on that basis.
But Mr. Speaker, I would hope that I don't ask the relevant question.
But we are now more than beginning to debate. I think we've been debating for the last 20 minutes the government's policy on the building of homes for rental. It was stated clearly 2 weeks ago, it's been stated clearly again this morning. So we had a question time. I'll be lenient. I allow the Honourable Member to ask his other supplementary. The Honourable Daniel Pinter.
Very much, Mr. Speaker, for your leniency.
Certainly from our side, it is understood the argument that the Chief Minister has helped his arguments. And indeed, that argument is not incompatible with what my longer friend is suggesting, that there might be a need for rental homes. But what the Chief Minister agrees with is that bearing in mind that not everybody does, that not everybody can afford the prices of a new affordable home, which are, compared to previous developments, are expensive and are out of reach of many ordinary people. But really, at the heart of this is that we need the community and the politicians to take hard decisions. And one of the hard decisions that we ought to be taking is introducing a rule that government housing should only be available to those that cannot buy, Mr. Speaker, and those that are vulnerable, that cannot afford to buy. And unless we are prepared to do that, we are going to always end up in a cycle of debate and counter-debate about this particular issue. Because, of course, if you allow every single Gibraltarian on the housing waiting list, in theory, you're always going to have a situation where demand outstrips supply.
Can we have a short answer, please? Because from the government side, we are beginning to get very, very lengthy answers to questions. If that is what happens now, I started to think what will happen when there are 8 more members asking questions on supplementary facts here.
There hasn't been a motion to that effect yet. But I want
to back to the point that the answer from government ministers can have increasingly interpreted and related.
If you could get asked the same question at every meeting, what can you do? I said, give me the same answer. Well, Mr. Speaker, there will be more meetings in the Select Committee which you can ask to address the bill. You've done so already, and I'm sure you can do so again. But, Mr. Speaker, I think it's very unfair of you to say that government is becoming lengthy.
Chief Minister, who very often quotes Hansa, just look at the Hansa, and you will see the number of pages of Hansa that are taken up by very lengthy answers from ministers. It's been going on for some time now.
Mr. Speaker, in that case, the answer to the Honourable Gentleman is no. If the Honourable Gentleman wants to give Mr. Speaker, wants to give the Honourable Gentleman a short answer, the answer is no, because his question is definitely, so the answer is no. But in order to be able to be open with this House, to provide this House with information, in order to give the details of this House, that this House, in my view, deserves as leader of the House, I'm going to give a full and detailed answer to the question that you have allowed the Honourable Gentleman to put, which was not a short question. It was a lengthy question with a very lengthy preamble, which requires an analysis of the demographic of the tendencies that we enjoy today as a landlord of the government, and an analysis also of the policy that led to Honourable Gentleman having to build for rental, which was the sale of first floor property, which is what I intend to do.
I don't know whether you want to say something before I embark on my answer. Thank you very much indeed. Mr. Speaker, the experience of the government has been that no ordinary people, as the Honourable Gentleman prefaced his question, have refused an offer at a price in senior territory on the basis that they are unable to afford the price. So I fully accept that developing, 10 years after we developed Montgolfier and Beachview territory, obviously, in particular, with the collapse of the pound against the euro, the cost in pounds of property in Gibraltar has gone up. That's an inescapable reality. Think about governments selling for more or selling for less. The government is not selling for a profit. The government is selling to cover costs without including the premium. But the price goes up per force because of the difficulty that we had with the currency. Now, if people were saying, look, I'd love to, but I can't, then all the gentlemen would have a point that we would have to address. People are not saying that at all. There may be an urban myth to that effect, but the reality is that everybody who has been called has said, fantastic, when can I come and choose? Now, the second point, Mr. Speaker, is that the Labour government is making an argument which he has made consistently in this House in the premise of somehow further restricting who is eligible for government housing. The Honourable Members went to the election with a policy of means testing for government housing, and we do not share that view. We've taken a different approach to the way that we do this. We think that people go on the housing waiting list, not because they want to rent, if they are able to buy, but because they want to buy, and they want to thereby signify their entitlement to buy. So I think that he is wrong in interpreting his question in that way, and therefore a short answer to his question would fail to address the fact that that part of the premise in which his question is based is wrong. Next, Mr. Speaker, is the issue of the demographic. We have an aging tenant population in a lot of the established estates. I go to our estates often, Mr. Speaker, and looking at what's happening in the refurbishment, I'm talking to tenants, and principally what I'm told is please build more for pension accommodation because I would like a pension of that. And I leave you my lovely maisonette in Brother O'Brien, I leave you my fantastic 4-bedroom here, or my 5-bedroom there. That's what I'm told. I have experience of it, direct experience of it. The lady has a number of phone calls a day, probably, speaking exactly that to the demographics. So they speak to what the Honourable Gentleman is saying. We have the Honourable Mr. Gregory telling us that he's not a tenant, he's an owner, but he still has reached the stage of his life where he would like that possibility. I gave an indication that we're looking at whether it is possible to develop for those purposes rather than provide rentals to provide potential for affordable purchase in that vein to move people on also in the affordable ladder. So the demographic tells us that we have a lot now of people who are single and living in properties larger than the ones that they need. Usually, the call for a 2 or 3 bedroom comes from people who are living with an elderly couple. So you've got an elderly couple living with a son or daughter, with grandson and grandchild. And they're the ones who need a quick move. That's where the pressure is. But they're not tenants. The tenants are the pensioners. So you build the pensioner flat, you resolve that problem also. So we're not seeing, in fact, the sorts of pressures that one might hear about on the street, on social media, etc., are the reality, the demographic reality of what's happening. Now, we have a different approach. I think this has become clear. The Honourable Gentleman's approach is the means testing restrictions over the housing business. Ours has not been that. But Mr. Speaker, they built a rental estate and they built rental for the elderly. One of the reasons they had to do that, Mr. Speaker, was because their management of the stock was different to ours. They started to sell the post-war stock. And so they were deluding the government as landlords of rental properties available. You pay a property for £12,000 or £20,000, which costs £150,000 to build, we don't think that's the right way to manage the stock. And so for all of those reasons, which I've broken down the speaker, not in an attempt to go on for longer just because I wanted to prevent it, but because Robert Irwin was making demographic points which were wrong in the preface to his question, and I need to break them down to tell him that I don't agree with him.
Question number 83, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
The Canada government says many people who were on the housing list on the 8th of December 2011 are still waiting for an allocation of a home.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, excluding allocations in the NAC, 83 applicants remain.
Mr. Speaker, just the Honourable Labour, and I appreciate the remaining most of this question, how to break down in relation to those requests, that be they 1RKB, etc.
Mr. Speaker, I do have the breakdown. 74 of those are from the 1RKB. And as an aside, Mr. Speaker, I don't have the exact figure, but a high percentage, and certainly more than 50%, are people who require elderly accommodation.
The other 50% are either young families or single individuals, isn't it?
Mr. Speaker, they are individuals, a lot of whom join the list to, in order to be eligible to buy in the affordable housing.
Because you have a breakdown in relation to that, because certainly that there are a number of people that come to see me, and increasingly I see a lot of people on housing issues. That are people that, for example, have a matrimonial split, the husband invariably is then told you only qualify for a one-bedroom flat, despite the fact that you may have, for example, three children. That's been the policy, and I'm not criticizing the government for it because it was a policy when we were there. And I've said in this house that I had disagreements with the former chief minister about this because I think it's terribly unfair. But just to have a breakdown of elderly people and younger people that just require either a one-bedroom flat, or indeed the housing authority has said, well, you only qualify for a one-bedroom flat.
No, Mr. Speaker, because that is not the question. I happen to have the breakdown for the first supplementary. The second supplementary is quite far removed. In fact, the Honourable Gentleman may not be aware of that the actual question is limited to those who were on the waiting list before December 2011. So it's limited to that. It's not about everybody who's on the waiting list. It's qualified to that. I have the breakdown of how many people are on the 1RKB, who they are, and what the demographic of the waiting list of the 1RKB 2011 remaining, I don't have. But to clarify the point that the Honourable Gentleman wanted to raise in relation to people who are separated and have children, Mr. Speaker, we generally continue the policy that has always been in place, which is obviously the limited stock that's available. Where a couple divorces or separates, whether the children are considered in the allocation depends on the legal status that the parent will have on the child. If there is, by way of a separation agreement or a court order, joint residence of the child, then the child will certainly be included in the application. But in the absence of that, then the child will not be included in the application. But on that basis, Mr. Speaker, we have been flexible in our policy for affordable housing and are allowing people the opportunity to buy an additional bedroom, and this is precisely to assist people who are separated, have children, but they don't necessarily have the joint residence of the children.
Mr. Speaker, If I just ask a question, I do not want to reopen a debate on this question, on the question, I'm just taking it from the outset, that it is remarkable that 50% of 74 people, i.e. 37 people, in our community have waited 7 years to be allocated a home under this administration, Mr. Speaker. How does the Honourable Minister rationalise this position with the argument that was answered, the questions answered by the chief minister, and the previous question, just better than to make sense?
Getting a number of Garcia Maria Maron, next question, please.
It's a question.
Or any of the overseas territories.
You cannot compare question time in this house to what happens anywhere. We have been in the house on occasion 10 hours a day, and then I've seen the same topic on the agenda has been questioned. It happens again and again. So what are you complaining about? You have a much bigger slice of the cake of question time than any other parliament. And by now, prove that I'm wrong. We will be able to show that I am wrong, and that any other member from this side are not in a more advantageous position during question time than any other. Prove that to me.
Speaker, the purpose of question time is to question
you.
Now you have to tell me. I can quote you. To elicit information, to force the government to adopt certain measures, and to write quote government policy. Those are the three purposes of question time.
I'll proceed with my supplementary, and Mr. Speaker, to rule it out if you think so, this afternoon. How does the government justify the fact that there are over 80 people on the housing waiting list from 2011, when they promised the people of Gibraltar and to those 81 people in their manifesto that they would be housed within 4 years? How does the government justify that, Mr. Speaker?
Well, Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, the answer to that is very simple. This is in 2011, there are in excess of 1,400 people on this list. So I think, Mr. Speaker, that it's quite remarkable that we have been able to hear and allocate as many people as we have.
So, Mr. Speaker, let me know the lady assure you that when they promised in 2011 that they would house everybody on the waiting list in 2011 and the previous within 4 years, that they knew that it wasn't possible. Because of course it is that quality of reading that must be shared, Mr. Speaker. Now, what I want, Mr. Speaker, is for the Honourable Lady to say, let's get there after the back box, and for her to explain to these people and provide the comfort that these people require, that they will be housed, and they're not going to be waiting another 8 years, Mr. Speaker, to be housed, and they're going to be able to do it. Where, Mr. Speaker, to address the parents to which I am referring? What I will say to the Honourable Gentleman is that I made very clear in the competition debates in this House that we found a list of people waiting for one bedroom accommodation which was greater than we expected. And in this speaker, what is also very clear is that people think sometimes that the government is in a state region, not to require social housing. And what you should ask us is whether any of these 80 have had any offers of allocation. Because many of those who have received offers of allocation come to refuse them. And what we haven't done, Mr. Speaker, is take them off the list even for the purposes of the answer. Because if we have taken them off the list for the purposes of the answer, the Honourable Gentleman might find that there's nothing left to bluster with. Nothing left to bluster with. Now, I fully accept that people are entitled under our system to three offers of housing. So they can say no to the first and they can say no to the second. And they can say no to the third, but then we are under no the obligation to continue to offer the medicine. But he should say, because he's been in government, that people come and say, not only one bedroom, but I get one bedroom and buy a bed on the first floor next to my grandmother at running the court. It happens. He knows it happens. And he knows it when you call them up and say, I've got something. At kid five and on the bottom floor, and we're going to have to think about our bed. That's what we're dealing with, Mr. Speaker. So, our conscience is not just clear, Mr. Speaker. It is fully satisfied that we have done what we said we would do, but those who have not had an allocation are either in very, very, very particular circumstances, some of them uncomfortable on some occasions, although they are telling us that they are eligible to, some of them refusing allocation, and none of them, Mr. Speaker, in the sort of criteria the Honourable Gentleman seemed to be advocating for when they started their questioning on the subject.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know what the circumstances of these 81 are. We're not in government. They are in government. They've not provided, no. What they haven't provided is the information. In the information they shared with this House, in answer to questions that the Honourable Gentleman has asked, no one has provided a breakdown out of those 81. How many of those have been made? A first fair offer, a second offer, or a third offer, or a breakdown of the circumstances in generic terms that those individuals face. Now, the government says that all of them have been offered one or two chances of a property and they have been refused. If it's not the case that there are, that this is the, I'm giving an honourable gentleman opportunity, not blinded by the fact that I am not in government, I don't have the statistics in front of me. But I have long held a view, and I'm asking the government whether they agree with it, I've long held a view that there is a gap in the stock in relation to one bedroom flat. And that is where the government perhaps, and indeed oppositions that are going to, parties that are going to be contesting the next election, ought to consider whether to build rental accommodation for those people. Or are they saying that actually that is not a problem in Gibraltar, and indeed there is sufficient that one bedroom flat in stock? It's just really that these 81 individuals, and I'll confine myself to these 81 individuals because that's the original question, have been offered one bedroom flat, or if that is relevant to them. And I think that the Honourable Lady actually alluded to the fact that most of them were seeking one bedroom flats. But actually, they've been refused. It's not a question of surprise, it's a question that they have refused the offer of allocation. Mr. Speaker, I have a figure would be no one in that list. I said the number would be lower, but honourable members know how allocations work. So I'm surprised they haven't asked that question. Perhaps they would want to ask that question at the next session of the House. So let's be very clear, Mr. Speaker. Most people who are under one bedroom list are there. Because that's what they're entitled to, but it's not what they want. In other words, very few people want a one-bedroom. Many of the people on the one-bedroom list, as it is today, are there because they're waiting to try and buy, not rent, a two-bedroom. And they didn't. Yes, Mr. Speaker, yes. Because there might be people on the list of 2011 who were going away to be students in 2011. But they were on the list, and that's what they're waiting for. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, if the Honourable Gentleman was privy to the names of people on the list, if the Honourable Gentleman, I don't know what anybody's asking me a question, I'm listening to my reply. If the Honourable Gentleman were privy to the names on the list, he would see that they are not names of people, in some instances, who are going to accept the offer of the best one bedroom that we have in Laguna or Glasses or Valdez or Newcastle. There are people who are on the list because they want to buy, and they want to buy a two bedroom. And there are people who are on the list because they are fathers who are in those situations which the other government has said they find themselves in, which we agree they need to provide for in a different way, and what they're doing is waiting to buy, Mr. Speaker. They make other arrangements, and they don't want a one-bedroom tenancy because they need something bigger because they do have children with them. And we have other people, Mr. Speaker, who simply are people wanting a pension of that of the sort
of the thought that global members of the group are telling us are not the ones that we need to build in order to resolve the problem. But actually it is. But as you were Mr. Speaker, so the Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister set out hopefully the part of the 2015 manifesto where we specifically address this issue, setting out that the list that we have eliminated were the 6, 5, 4, 3 and 2, and that the list that we have not been able to do with the 1 RKD list, and setting out how we intended to continue to deal with that, Mr. Speaker. So I think that demonstrates, Mr. Speaker, the commitment that we have entered into and how we have discussed it. But the Honourable Members really do perplex me sometimes because their questions are sometimes contradictory. At one moment, they're telling us that people who have a house have a one bedroom list, when we're telling them that we're going to build one bedroom for pensioners, and the next moment they're telling us to build 4 bedrooms or 5 bedrooms. One moment they're telling us to go pay for it, and the next moment they're telling us to open an office and let you go pay for it. Mr. Speaker, we can stand here and defend our position, we can account come home for until you stop us from doing so. But our position is not going to change. We're going to continue to tell you that we're doing the right thing in order to reach a goal for this waiting list, and we're not going to play the trick of cutting the waiting list by stopping people from being eligible to be on it, which is what honourable members would do by introducing these questions, and with the questions, and they won't get in by reducing that one age of common to this particular system. We will continue to do our best to house the people in Tunisia as quickly and as adequately as we are able to through affordable housing, to building for pensioners, in order to provide more rental stock in that way. You think it's the right thing to do, you think we're delivering.
Question number 84, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, the government states how many of the 31 people who joined the housing social category A list in 2018 have been allocated homes.
Mr. The Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, 9 applicants categorised socially in 2018 have been allocated homes. Additionally, 10 applicants have had flats earmarked, which the housing department are awaiting to be returned to stock in order to allocate to them, and one has had the social categorisation removed due to change of circumstances.
Question number 85.
The remaining 11 is the Honourable Minister having visibility on that.
Mr. Speaker, they are actively managed by the Housing Department along with all the other demands on for allocation.
In relation to the term that earmarks the return to stock, when does the Minister envisage that? Is it a slow process or a little?
Mr. Speaker, it depends on the flat. Obviously, when keys are returned to the Housing Department from a former tenant, prospective tenants have the option of either having a flat refurbished for them or taking them in self-repair. They then have to be refurbished. The turnaround usually takes a maximum of 2 months. So it will be at some point within the next 3 months.
Mr. Speaker, just the Honourable Lady having statistics or ask her department to compile statistics as to how long it actually takes for somebody on the housing social category A to be allocated a home. Again, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking the question because I've recently seen a couple of people that are on the housing on the social A list and have been on that list for a considerable period of time, and it would otherwise their concerns with the minister at least indicated how long it might take for them to be housed. And because we're talking about a list that is compiled of the most needy people in the jurisdiction in terms of housing.
Mr. Speaker, the social list is the most needy in the context, is the most needy in the context of the most needy, because if you weren't needy, Mr. Speaker, then you wouldn't be on the housing waiting list to begin with. But the answer to that, Mr. Speaker, depends not just on the circumstances of the individual and there are different social categorizations, but it has a lot to do with the target property which the applicant requires. there is more stock of particular property than less stock of others. And whereas there is more stock and essentially a quicker turnaround of the three arcades, it may be slower, for example, in the four arcades, and even slower in the case of the five arcades. So it's a question of supply and demand, and that is how the department balances the allocation of the flats. If there is a particular case which the Honourable Gentleman thinks someone has a very pressing social need, and if the Honourable Gentleman lists for an incredibly long period, and this is going back then, we don't want to advise them privately, obviously. But the department are very, very mindful of the social list and the medical list when allocating. As an aside, Mr. Speaker, it's actually sometimes remarkable when people are made an offer of allocation on the social list, and as a chief minister was saying, people will turn it down because they don't like the location, the area, the floor, or I don't know, the colour of the hair of you know, the neighbour's dog. Because it does, unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, demands do get to that extreme. And for people who are on the social waiting list, they will not be given the option by the Housing Allocation Committee to take another property. It's a question of if your need is that extreme, unless the property is legitimately unsuitable for you because of accessibility characteristics or something that is justifiable, then the offer will be withdrawn, the person will be withdrawn from the property.
Question number 85, the Honourable E.J. Phillips. Can the government set the arrears in unpaid rent for community government rentals as of the 23rd of January 2019? Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, as I have explained to the Honourable Gentleman in the past, the balance of arrears are calculated at month end, and the balance as of 1st of January 2019 is £4,710,372.64.
So with that date, that represents an increase, in fact, in rental arrears owing to the government. And does the Minister have an update as to those figures since they may have been referred to the fact that you asked this question back in January?
Mr. Speaker, traditionally January and February are difficult months, and we tend to see a spike because people tend to not pay their rent in the months after Christmas. We saw a spike January, February, there was a decrease in March. We've had a spike again this year because of, unfortunately, the combination of various bank holidays over the last couple of weeks, and people who come and pay at the counter in person have not come and paid with them. And we've had an increase this month, which we expect to be paid back next month, so we'll see it balance out. But going back to the previous question, because that is why the department wants to encourage people to have payment deductions at school, because when they are intervening bank holidays and people are planned to come and pay their rent and don't come and pay their rent because it's inconvenient because of the bank holiday that week, having automated payment does away with that risk. The balance as at the last month end is £4,737,558.4. But as I said, because I queried this figure with the department, and they told me that they've experienced a lot of problems because of the succession of the Easter holidays and the bank holidays, and they expect that we will recuperate the difference and we probably have a better balance at the end of this month.
I appreciate it was a very difficult task. The figure seems to sort of gravitate around 4.7 million and remain relatively static over the last 8 months. And is the government concerned that some of the enforcement processes and methodology they use to collect these rents are becoming likewise stagnant? And are there any plans to improve the methods or review them to see how they can be improved in terms of workability?
I can assure Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman, that people have not studied and are continuously reviewed. What they will see now is escalated to litigation. I'm not saying the litigation has not yet commenced, and it is certainly about to commence in the next week, because I've seen cases being drafted and going backwards and forwards. So people who are in employment and defaulting in the payment of rent can expect to be receiving those claims from very soon.
Question number 86, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government confirm the basis on which rent relief was terminated for households for every month in 2018?
and for the end of the meeting for housing inequality.
Mr. Speaker, the subject is as follows. In January, one deceased, one admitted to elderly residential services. In February, three deceased, one admitted to elderly residential services. Two are the reasons why the categories are going to be removed. In March, two were admitted to elderly residential services, two were deceased, and one no longer qualified. In April, two deceased, one admitted to elderly residential services. In May, one deceased, one admitted to elderly residential services, and two no longer qualified. In June, three were admitted to elderly residential services. In July, one was deceased, two admitted to elderly residential services, two no longer qualified. Someone passed away in August. There were no changes in September. In October, one person failed to renew their application for one living. In November, one person was admitted to elderly residential services and one passed away. And in December, one person was admitted to elderly residential services.
Question number 8 is from the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
The Canada Government State Health intends to house over 1,385 people currently on the pre-housing and housing waiting list.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, a considerable number of people on the waiting list have applied to purchase or consign centenary terraces or have expressed an interest to buy in other forthcoming affordable housing. Additionally, we have also announced the construction of rental homes by way of special status on adjacent to the island. Once the purchase of all affordable homes is complete in the coming months, we will be in a position to know how many applicants remain on the waiting list and assess the remainder accordingly.
Speaker, it's clear between this side of the house and that side of the house that there's a difference of opinion that probably will be tested in the general election over means testing of government housing. It's quite clear to those watching this, Mr. Speaker, that we believe that social homes should be provided for the most needy in our community. But in so far as the 1,285 people, and I take the point that Speaker has made himself for earlier questions on the order paper, that many of the people on this list, as is suggested, are waiting for government affordable homes. Would it not make sense, when we're dealing with social housing, to separate the two lists into those that would get? If I understand from the previous responses in the other questions that this list encompasses and includes those people looking for affordable homes, would it make sense then, when we're dealing with social housing for the most needy in our community, that is separated from the list in relation to those that are seeking affordable housing? I just think it makes sense. I know that Melanie Rondon, Mr. Speaker, made the point in questioning today, and I would encourage the government to adopt that position.
I'm not sure whether that was a supplementary question or a statement, but in order to clarify for one of the gentlemen, internally it is. The people what we're not going to do is deny someone the right in being on the waiting list, but it may well be that that person has either submitted an application to purchase or expressed an interest to purchase or tell them, I just want to be on the waiting list to purchase. We have, within the wider list, internally, then we can separate both. So when it comes to allocation, someone may be at the top of the list and may receive the point, but well, actually I don't want the flat that you're offering. Leave me on the list because I don't want to leave my position on the list, but just call me when the next development for affordable housing is available. Because Mr. Speaker, the important thing is we need some kind of order when we are then proceeding to contact people for the purchase of the affordable housing. And we go by the order in which they appear on the list. And people may want to be on the list and there are accumulating points for the time that they are on the list. But Mr. Speaker, the point that I want to make is that we will continue to provide, to construct affordable housing. And in our experience, people who can afford to buy affordable housing will not aspire to rent as an alternative. People want to be on the waiting list so that they are in the system to have priority when their opportunity to purchase in the affordable housing scheme is around.
I know from the answer to that question that the government is looking for order in the system. But you know, I certainly would argue that there is a lack of order in the system that is being encouraged so far as the fusion of the list and then identifying those for affordable. Wouldn't the minister agree that means testing would solve this problem when carving out
individuals that can afford affordable homes and those who cannot. Clearly, need testing is designed to meet the needs of a community and also meet the needs of those that would like to aspire to affordable homes, that can afford that extra bit every month to get a mortgage and buy on the 50-50 scheme or whatever percentage that is proposed by the government. Would it not make sense to reconsider the government's position on the question of means testing and adopt that policy? And I put it to the minister whether she would reconsider the government's position in respect to means testing for government housing.
Returning to the answer that you've just given, it appears to say that the way that, the government essentially decides to allocate affordable homes is that they see the housing waiting list, and they will identify the people at the top of the housing waiting list. And those appear to be prioritised over people at the bottom of the housing waiting list.
Doesn't that encourage more people to go onto the housing waiting list? And couldn't the government explore the possibility of decoupling the question of somebody wanting to buy an affordable home from having to go onto the housing waiting list? Otherwise, you're always going to get the situation whereby there are going to be hundreds and hundreds of people on the housing waiting list.
I think I already said a couple of hundred questions ago that we do have this internal difference.
Question number 88, the Honourable E.J. Pate.
Since the Canada government states, the refurbishment of the Canada will be completed by February 2019. I appreciate the question is now obviously redundant, but we can have an update on those things. Thank you.
Mr. Beyond the Minister of Housing and Quality.
Mr. Speaker, the main elements of the work forming part of the external refurbishment of this Premier House are on track to be completed by June 2019. A short extension of time was required due to delays caused by adverse weather conditions, and there was a necessary reprogramming of work due to eventualities which have come about as a result of the poor condition of the roof and other substandard building elements and unforeseen problems which were discovered during the course of the refurbishment. This, coupled with the fact that the building is a senior citizen residential plot, has complicated the refurbishment plan.
Can the Minister confirm what measures are going to be put in place to avoid, again, the same difficulties that we had last June so far as for our elderly, you know, many of them have experienced problems insofar as the work surrounding and obviously very inconvenient for them. But many of them still come back to us asking questions about when this will be finished, and I'm grateful for the response to June. But what that has been put in place in order to avoid a recurrence of the same complaints that we may receive this year when the weather temperatures increase?
Mr. Speaker, it's unlikely that we have the same issues that we had last summer because we've progressed a year since then. So now it's a question of finalising the refurbishment, which I very much hope will be ready for June. It's just there is an unforeseen issue with the condition of the roof that was discovered recently as part of the refurbishment, and it was actually worse than anybody expected. And it was conditions which were not could not be foreseen at the time of the initial survey for the work, and that's what has brought us back slightly. But we are coming to the end of the work, so hopefully it's now the final stretch, Mr. Speaker, and we should be seeing progress in the completion and certainly asked the contractors and everybody involved in the management of the refurbishment work that they ensure that they can complete everything that can be compartmentalised so that progress can be made. And there is as little inconvenience as possible because it's regrettable that we found ourselves in the situation that we have had found ourselves in the block where our residents are elderly.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that will be a great comfort to the elderly residents of that particular block. Indeed, as my honourable friend has said, A number of them have come to see me. I have had reason to help them to draft letters to the Honourable Minister. I've also been down there, and I've spoken to people there, and indeed to workers who have been there. Now, one of the issues that was brought to my attention, and I'm long in the tooth not to believe everything that I am told, but one of the issues that certainly was brought to my attention, as having contributed to the problem, was the payment of subcontractors. That the main contractor had been paid, that contractor was paid one of the subcontractors, but it hadn't fed down the contractor's chain, and that had caused a problem with people from those subcontractors, basically going to work because of course they hadn't been paid. Is there any truth in that rumor? And if there is an element of truth, what measures are being taken in order to ensure that does not happen again?
Mr. Speaker, the situation is not that the Honourable Gentleman describes it, but what happened, unfortunately, a few months ago was that one of the subcontractors of the subcontractor of the company dissolved. So that caused a delay of about a month. The company left. The subcontractor left, and that caused a delay. But our subcontractor has met all the financial liabilities, so that there isn't an issue in terms of any further delay on account of the finances. And going back to the Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition's previous question in relation to the summer bank, in relation to the balconies and the windows, these have all been complete, so they should be, and they can already be opened, so that will not be an issue this summer at all, and there's nothing to do now. I mean.
Question number 89, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Does the Canada government confirm an allocation to the new government affordable housing scheme for your comment?
And for the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the sale of a farm to Junior Chelsea has already commenced.
Question number 90, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government state that it will bring a bill to widen the scope of domestic violence protection between non-physical and pecuniary abuse?
Answer the Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, the government is already considering widening the scope of domestic violence to non-physical and economic abuse as part of our national strategy on domestic abuse.
Mr. Speaker, this is an area in which I have asked the government a number of questions on previously, and I believe in the budget last year, the Honourable Minister says it is important to continue to raise awareness of domestic abuse, and it is important to work collectively and to end all forms of violence against women and girls, with which every single member of this House will agree, of course, with that statement. So it's all every member of this House should agree with. Mr. Speaker, insofar as the question is concerned, it's a year on, nearly. And I know that the national strategy in respect to domestic violence is to meet all those concerns, to meet particularly the RGP, who have also raised this issue quite publicly in newspapers. And of course, domestic violence organisations are also continuing to raise this issue with the Minister. Is the Minister in any way going to share with us a timeline in respect of this important piece of legislation that protects women and girls and these other men from domestic violence? There have been many issues, of course, in several jurisdictions about domestic violence to men, women, children. And therefore, I would ask the Minister to give some clarity as to when it was supposed to bring these new laws to our community, given the fact that we're now sort of trailing fairly behind the UK position.
I do not accept the statement that you're trailing behind the UK position. We are working on numerous initiatives in relation to the prevention of domestic abuse, not just the legislation, because the legislation, of course, is an important framework for protection, but there are lots of other things that are that are necessary and that are in the pipeline and that there are, that we are continuously working on. This is something that I established 6 years ago, I think. And it's something that has been evolving remarkably since then. You see, that it's something that we keep under continuous review insofar as the drafting of legislation, that is something that is in the pipeline and will be made available to us as soon as it possibly can be. Clearly, it is something that needs to happen in the forthcoming months and keen to ensure that we wrap up and formalise anything that is that continues to be remaining in relation to the prevention of domestic abuse. A lot of work has been done, and I think it's important that we communicate and we showcase and continue to remind people of the good work that we've done, particularly in relation to awareness campaigns. I work very closely with the principal organisations that are there to help and support the victims of domestic abuse, as well as importantly the perpetrators. And I have regular meetings both with the Commissioner of Police on the subject, as well as with the Chief Executive of the Care Agency. And it's something that I can assure the Honourable Gentleman and everybody indeed that we are continuously progressing. Rest assured, Mr. Speaker, that we have a number of announcements in relation to domestic abuse coming up very soon.
The main reason why I raised this question at this level is because of comments made in the media by organisations that are closely related to domestic violence. We believe domestic violence in our community is rife, and given the developments in the United Kingdom in relation to the legislation that underpins the protections for people who are victims of domestic violence, and the call, in fact, by the Commissioner in respect of that underpinning legislation, and given the fact that the Minister of our own mission has suggested that we've been looking at this for 6 years, I would have thought, given that the budget speech of last year would have pushed up a little in terms of timing. And I know that the Honourable Minister won't commit to a time frame now, but I think it's important to remind the government that it's a very significant area of legislation that needs to be dealt with as soon as possible.
Question number 91, the Honourable Ms. Andrew has hung on.
What is the average turnaround time of a government dwelling between the time that it is vacated and the time that the keys are handed over to a new tenant?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Housing and Quality.
Mr. Speaker, the average turnaround of a government dwelling between the time it is vacated and the keys are handed over to a new tenant can vary. This is due to the condition of the flat. Some may only require a change of locks and cleaning of the property, and others may require extensive refurbishment or may be connected to external factors such as a new roof. After an extensive review of systems, the housing department now aims to achieve a turnaround in 3 months, so this target is not always possible. Mr. Speaker, constituents who come to see me are frustratingly reporting delays of more than 3 months and even years. My question is, could anything be done to expedite what seems to be too long a wait when people are literally waiting in families' couches to have housing? We do know that government can expedite things when they want to, so. Mr. Speaker, I don't quite understand the supplementary, and I really fail to understand the comment at the end. The government would want to expedite everything as much as possible in every possible way. I'm not sure whether the Honourable Lady refers to people who are waiting for refurbishment or people who are waiting for the allocation of a home generally. Certainly, I'm not aware of a refurbishment taking over a year at all, let alone years. So, if there is, I have been extremely strict, and this is one of the things that I think has been a complete overhaul of the housing department, and they have been very strict in the introduction of the collection of statistics and the performance, the management of the performance of our data, and I have, I think, probably for the first time ever in a housing department introduced KPIs, and that I don't say the words statistics, data, and KPIs often enough. That's probably the first thing I say when I open the door and the last thing as I leave. Now, as a result of this very strict management, and it's taken us a couple of years to be able to introduce new systems and new mechanisms, expressing the target is that the turnaround for a refurbishment is 3 months. That years ago, Mr. Speaker, was unheard of. I do accept that years ago, the refurbishment of a government flat before our time took over a year and sometimes up to 2 years, and sometimes we're not refurbished at all. But I certainly cannot accept that that is the situation today. If the Honourable Lady has a constituent who says that they are awaiting a flat because it's been refurbishment for over 3 months, and I would ask her to contact me and I will look into it. But that is certainly from my review of the data, not something that is common practice unless there is a major construction work that's required, like rebuilding decks or having to replace a roof. But certainly my department and the housing department, the housing agency, and our subcontractors are very, very closely managed to ensure we achieve these targets.
So thank you for standing order to the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think we're understanding over 7-2, this is 10 standing over 7-1, in order to see the government bill.
Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against, carried. Bill, first and second reading. A bill for the voluntary implementation of the European Union laws after the Treaty of the European Union, the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union, the Treaty establishing the European Atomic Energy Community and the European Economic Area Agreement ceases to apply to Gibraltar, and to provide such conditional or other provisions as are deemed necessary and for connected purposes. The only the Deputy Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have just moved that a bill for an act to provide for the voluntary implementation of European Union law after the Treaty on European Union, the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union, the Treaty establishing the European Atomic Energy Community, and the European Economic Area Agreement seems to apply to Gibraltar, and provides that transitional or other provisions as are deemed necessary and for domestic purposes to be read a first time.
I now put a question, which is that a bill for an act to provide for the voluntary implementation of European Union laws after the Treaty on the European Union, the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union, the Treaty establishing the European Atomic Energy Community, and the European Economic Area Agreement, which seeks to apply to Gibraltar, and to provide such transitional or other provisions as have been necessary, and for collective purposes, to be read a first time. Those in favour? Those again called the European Union Laws Voluntary Implementation Act 2019.
The House is now adjourned to Thursday the 30th of May at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which will be after European parliamentary elections have been held, allowing the clerk and the staff of the House to do the work they need to do in respect of Gibraltar's participation in those elections. Before the House rises, I'm sure I join all members of the House in saying that we all very much welcome that there will be European Parliament elections, and in thanking in anticipation the clerk and all members of his staff who have been responsible for ensuring that Gibraltar is able to participate in those elections, although the circumstances in which we are going to vote have been moving upon us late, and that has required that Mr. Martinez and his staff have worked harder than they are usually required to work, and in a shorter time window to ensure that Gibraltar is able to comply with all its obligations under the United Kingdom's and Gibraltar legislation and European rules in the participation of the people of Gibraltar and all those eligible to vote in Gibraltar in those European elections. And I will be able to now adjourn.
The House will now adjourn to Thursday, the 30th of May at 3 in the afternoon.